Hello and welcome to Who Is She? A Bechdel Test First podcast. For every episode, we're going to explore the legacy of an extraordinary woman in film and how she changed the landscape of cinema for the better. I'm your host, Beth Webb, and I'm joined today by my Bechdel Test First partners in crime, beginning with Bechdel founder Karina Antrobus.
Hi.
And we've got our assets auteur and creative genius, Steph Watts.
Hello.
And our steadfast editorial wonder, Caitlin Quinlan.
Hiya.
As it is our first episode, I think it's only right that we let people know who we are and a little bit about what we do. So, Karina, I'm going to flip the question and ask you, who are we?
Who are we? We are many things, many things. But to bring it down to the crux, we are a collective of girls who love film that believe that there are severe lack of positive roles for women in cinema, and we want to do something about that. We've been going for 5 years now. I'm very, very proud of everything that we've achieved so far. Just from starting out thinking that we would just be putting on screenings in the back of a pub on a DVD with like no real production facilities, to being able to put on massive screenings with incredible directors. The Bechdel test itself, I guess it's important to talk about that, is the birth child of Alison Bechdel, who's an American cartoonist and a graphic novelist. And she came up with this idea that she came up with this comic strip, and the comic strip has these two women going on a date together, and one says to the other, "Let's go to the movies," and the other one says, "Our thing is, I only go to the movies if the film that we're going to watch passes a test."
Yeah.
And the test is that it needs to have two women in it that have a conversation with each other about something other than a man. And very few films actually pass this very, very low bar, quite silly test. And I think it's a very good starting point to looking at the discrepancies in how women are given a spotlight in films. And it's by no means a measure of if a film's good or not. Mm. And I also love the fact that it's about women talking to one another.
Yeah.
And I love talking about film, which helps being a podcast. I just think it's a really simple test, and we've been able to have a lot of fun with it. And I love going to our events and finding out how many people have or haven't heard of the Bechdel test, and educating so many people as to what it is and then what we do. And I feel like people really go away from our events with a sense of enlightenment.
So I think the point of this podcast is we want to really explore all aspects of the film industry from a female perspective. So over the course of the next six episodes, we're going to profile six extraordinary women who have altered the landscape of cinema through their craft, through their legacy. And we're just going to delve in, take a look at the work that they've done, and then open it up into a broader conversation. So for this episode, we're really excited to be talking about Josephine Decker, who is the director of Madeline's Madeline, which we have just hosted a screening of at the Barbican. We've also got an interview coming up with Josephine slightly later. Caitlin had the honour of speaking with her, and she's just wonderful, isn't she?
Yeah, it's just so such, lovely. Lovely.
Generous.
Isn't she just?
Just a very generous and spirited lady. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into this episode's profile, which is of the incandescent, the inquisitive, and the downright lovely Josephine Decker.
You know, I want you to be careful, you know, because you're not...
I'm not what?
You know, you're not like the other people.
Because I'm black?
No.
Madeline. Regina.
I just feel like you're maybe not ready, you know, your situation.
What are you saying?
It's different from the other people in the, you know, everyone else is stable. And, you know, if you had an episode, which you probably will, what would happen? What Evangeline is going to...
Fuck! So that was a clip from Josephine's latest film, Madeline's Madeline, which comes to us courtesy of Mubi UK and Ireland. And there's also an amazing Josephine Decker retrospect, which is available on the Mubi streaming platform right now. So for this episode, I'm going to go to Karina to tell us a little bit about our subject, first of all. So Karina, Josephine Decker, who is she?
Well, what isn't she? Josephine Decker has got so many facets to her creative output. I mean, she has acted a lot, but she doesn't use that as what she is best known for or is best at, as for, by her own admission. I personally haven't seen her act. I don't know that. I can't say. But I think in terms of her directing talent, she's definitely ploughing a lot of her talents into that, in terms of her being a visual artist and an artist. She's edited, she actually wanted to originally be a composer, which I think is a really interesting insight into where her mind is and how her creative brain works. And I think somebody who wants to be a composer is very much got the feels of wanting to direct as well, because essentially you're directing a whole sympathy of items that create one wonderful piece of work, i.e. either music or film. But she's a New Yorker. That makes her an American, because my geography is that great. she's certainly embracing her directing a lot more now, and she's certainly becoming certainly an auteur, I would say. If you've watched all her films, you definitely get a sense of themes. There's certain thematics within her films which are threading all her work together in a very mysterious, wonderful, individual way, and they really stick to you. And I remember when she first brought over her films over to the UK a couple of years ago, and I hadn't quite had the cinematic grammar to really understand it in a way, but watching it again now with the release of her latest film has been a really wonderful process of just looking at how she how the work sticks with you. And I can't really describe it beyond that until you really see it. In a way, it's very, very individual.
It's not one for podcasts, so no, to try to describe the visual attributes of this incredible
But no, she's a fantastic film director, and I'm really excited to see what her career gives us in the coming years of her work.
Definitely. Okay, so we'll go to Caitlin next. So Caitlin, tell us a little bit more about what she's done, what she's doing.
Yeah, so I guess as Karina says, it's kind of more about what hasn't she done. She's started off in dance and in music, so she was a ballet dancer. I think even sort of dabbling in tango and, you know, taking her kind of musical skills to drumming, the accordion. She sings. She's kind of.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
yeah. The accordion.
So, the accordion. You can check it out on her website. But yeah, there's so much that she's done, and you know, and now it's kind of extending into feature film and short film, but she's very much embedded in this kind of world of physical theatre, performance art, and I think that's definitely something that really comes through in her work. She's this kind of multi-talented, you know, multi-hyphenate artist in all senses of the word, and really her film projects, I think, they really show that. They show how you can combine various mediums and really explore kind of every avenue of what it means to perform, really. Yeah. I think that's really crucial to her work. And I mean, she's even kind of gone on to do activist documentary work. And it's, very much about how we kind of move in our society and how we express ourselves in those ways. I think she's really interesting for how she combines all of those different features.
It's quite seamless, isn't it, how she brings it in that really you're not really conscious. She's kind of sneaky. Like, she sneaks in all these other attributes that she has.
Yeah, definitely.
And she's wonderful. So, ahead of our very special screening of Madeline's Madeline that we hosted, Caitlin caught up with Josephine to chat about her craft. How was it?
It was great. She was super lovely. We spoke about her career and her kind of attitude to filmmaking and her art generally. So she was so interesting, had so much to say. So
here we go.
Okay. Hi, Josephine. Thanks so much for chatting to us.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be here.
So we're here for the Bechdel Test Vest podcast, and it's called Who Is She? And so I wanted to start with, you know, give you the opportunity to answer that question for yourself, I guess. So who are you?
Wow. That's a big one. The boring version, I guess, is that I'm a filmmaker from the United States. Mm-hmm. And Madeline, the feature that is playing tonight, is my third narrative feature. And what would be the nice, cool answer? Who am I? I think I'm a person who's very interested in process. And I would say that, like, the process of making this film particularly revealed a lot to me about who I am, actually, in great ways and in terrible ways. So I think I'm really still on the journey of discovering who I am.
Amazing. Great. So just briefly, if you can, talk about Madeline as a film and kind of what it's about and how you would, talk about the narrative in your own words. That would be useful for our listeners, I think.
So Madeline is about a teenager, a mixed race teenager, who's part of this acting troupe run by this white director who's really excited and engaged by Madeline and her whole kind of group of actors. Madeline is the youngest member of the troupe. And the director, sort of, as they're all working together and devising a new theater project together, sort of an immersive theater piece, the director becomes more and more interested in Madeline, to the point where she wants to really put Madeline's kind of like true life story as the centerpiece of her show. And to some degree, Madeline is forced to kind of reconcile with, like, who gets to control my story and how do I tell my own story? And I think the deeper question is, yeah, who gets to tell you, and who gets to tell anyone else's story, and why? And so it looks at all of the kind of question marks around that question of just making art, period.
Yeah, great. And I think something that's really interesting about your work as a whole and your other films is there is this question of how do we kind of actively engage with stories, and especially, you know, you do so much with performance art and theatre art and various elements of artistic expression. And I guess sometimes, you know, you can think when we watch something, we can't be passive viewers, and there's a lot of kind of work that goes into appreciating a story. I just wonder, is that how you always kind of approach your work, and is that something you think a lot about, you know, active engagement really with art?
Yeah, see, that's one of the most important things to me in making films, is that the audience is a participant in the artwork. And I think part of that is not is making a work that's about questions instead of answers. And I think this is definitely a work like that. It's kind of launches a bunch of questions that I don't necessarily always have the answer to. And I think in a way that the ending of the film is very open to interpretation. And also I think the film itself, like, something that I talk a lot with this editor I work with regularly, David Barker, he always says, like, you have to make sure you leave space for the audience. And what he means is really, if there's like an A, B, and C, and if you leave out B, if there's an A, B, and C to a story and you leave out B, the audience creates their own version of B. They sort of write the narrative with you. And so it's sort of about finding these, like, in a way, they're structural. I don't want to call them gaps. They're more like structural advancements. Mm-hmm. They're kind of leaps that the story makes. And then the audience, like, in some ways, I think those are some of the most, usually the most exciting moments in the movie are those leaps. And the audience is kind of filling in what happened before and what happened now. So that kind of participation is super important to me. It's something I try for very hard in the work that I make.
Yeah, and I think that's apparent as well with Butter on the Latch and Thou Was Mild and Lovely, your features previously. There are those kinds of gaps where, you know, you're not really sure what's going on necessarily, but there's so much to explore and figure out. Do you think that's something that you're going to continue to develop through your work? You know, it's been there since the beginning, and is that you'll carry that forward maybe?
Oh, definitely. In terms of just having active participation by the audience, be part of the...
Yeah, and kind of, you know, not always adhering to a kind of, a clear-cut narrative necessarily, or, you know, always allowing space for that interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I'm sure I'll make all kinds of movies, and I hope I make some that are slightly more commercial than the ones I've been making, so those might be a little more straightforward, but I think that, you know, strong narrative and strong storytelling isn't necessarily about losing participation. I think in some ways it's about just deepening it. And, you know, this film particularly is pretty formally, takes big risks. But I think you can do a fairly straightforward narrative and still have a strong audience participation by kind of like creating, I think the Dardenne brothers, for instance, there are formal things that they do in their films, long takes, but they leave kind of mysteries inside of their stories so that you're always curious about the next thing. And I don't think audiences need everything spelled out to them but I think the Dardenne brothers I would argue are very, very narrative filmmakers. Mm-hmm. But they're very good at holding mystery and allowing for active audience participation.
Yeah. I guess one of the things that has struck me, and I think the other Bechdel girls as well, in watching your films, is how kind of nature plays a really big part, and animals particularly. And I think it's clear in Madeline's Madeline, but you know, in That Was Mild and Lovely, the farm setting, and you know, constantly being in nature, in the forest. And I just wonder what the kind of the story behind those choices are, if it's just, you know, you love being outdoors and
that is actually most of it. Yeah. Really, I think nature is like one of the most it's such an inspiring source, and it's so spiritual too. And my first two features, I think I was really looking for a reason to go into nature, and making a movie is a great excuse to spend a long time researching in nature. If you're making a movie in nature, then shooting a movie that's set in a beautiful place. Madeline's Madeline is set in New York City, so it was like very much the least kind of natural. But you're right that there's a lot of mask work and, you know, pig masks. And I think there is something about the film that is harnessing, which I think is what, you know, interesting theater does, and what especially physical theater, which is the main thing that I've studied, does, which is about like kind of harnessing the human form. And obviously humans are very natural, and I think this film in a way has a nature to just the way that it uses human bodies and experiments with, like, you know, yes, masks and stuff like that, but it was also very purposeful that, you know, all of the music in the film, I think almost all of the music in the film, is created from just human bodies, either voices or physical bodies, and I just wanted that to feel that like almost everything in the film you could make with your own person, so that even though you're in this big chaos of concrete, you know, New York City, there's still something a little bit hopefully natural about it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And also it's interesting, I was going to bring up that Madeline's Madeline feels, in many ways, the characters in your work are dealing with these interior crises and these interior problems, but they're kind of, you know, I guess in your first two features, they're expressed in a more natural landscape, whereas in Madeline's Madeline, it feels sort of extra interior. It's all inside rehearsal spaces or their family home, or just, yeah, the city, as you say. And that's really interesting, that balance of space and kind of confinement, I guess. I don't know how you kind of approach that with this film, if that was really, you know, in your mind.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's interesting because I think for sure Madeline's interiority and making a film that was had a strong subjectivity to it, that was deeply a first person experience, I think that was very clearly one of the things I wanted to do with the film. I wanted the audience to be very immersed, like, in her mind. And then I had written this script that takes place, so much of it takes place in a theater. And I remember at some point, like when we started shooting, I was like, oh my God, I wrote the whole movie in like rooms.
Yeah.
And I just didn't even realize that until we were shooting. And I was like, we're never going to be outside. But I think in a cool way, I mean, I hope that in the film, the rooms transform and kind of become in a weird way, this place where you access the subconscious, which is very natural. Mm-hmm. But for us shooting it, I think we were all desperate to be outside a little bit more. I try to seek inspiration through music, painting, literature. And for this movie, I was really obsessed with minimalist paintings. I was like obsessed with paintings that were just like one color brushstrokes, you know, and because you can see so many worlds in them, you can kind of make your own painting as you're staring at that. And it leaves so much space for interpretation. And so it's sort of heartening to feel that maybe that in some ways, I assume that that's maybe what you're talking to, is that there's a lot of space for the audience to kind of like create their own version of the film.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much, Josephine, for your answers. They were absolutely wonderful. Hope you enjoy the event tonight.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here and grateful to have your support on this screening and to be talking to you and all of you guys listening.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Josephine.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Steph, if I could come to you and ask, why is it that we love Josephine Decker, or specifically you? What do you love about her and her work?
I think it's kind of that she does kind of mix all of her like talent so well, and she comes from such, I feel like, this very particular perspective that I think is kind of like applied to her, but also to kind of a female experience or a female like gaze, definitely. She has this kind of, a lot of her films will have this kind of like very shallow focus. They're all very kind of image led. Like they might not be kind of narratively traditional, like how you'd expect to watch a film. But I think maybe coming from that kind of like more arts background is maybe, yeah, changed kind of how she interprets like how a film should go. Because I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be narrative or like plot led. It can be kind of more image based. And I really love that kind of, yeah, that way that she kind of pulls out a story through these kind of images and kind of small vignette scenes that all kind of form together to form something. I just think like her female characters in, yeah, Madeline's Madeline, you have this kind of very volatile, like, main character, which Helena Hauer plays so amazingly well.
And it's her breakout role, which absolutely,
I can't believe that's her kind of first or like, yeah, big kind of breakout thing that she's been in. It's just amazing. Like, you have this kind of characters where you don't know what they're going to do next, where they're going to go, and they're a little bit scary, like, and I find that so refreshing
they're petrifying.
Yeah,
films are, can be very eerie.
But she's not ashamed to actually say, yeah, my films that have horror in them, there's a very certain horror element to it. I mean, I know she's would probably hate the categorization of that to be so solemn, but yeah, she's a horror director. I mean, a lot of her influences, as she has said, is The Antichrist, for instance. That's what actually one of her influences. And then Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind, which is, in a way, is an emotional horror, isn't it? So she was very interested in that kind of world of getting into your head. And then Black Swan as well, which she says was a great portrayal of a female character that could really allow you to get inside of that and exploring mental health as well, which is what Madeline's Madeline certainly does.
Karina, tell us about your nightmare.
Oh God. Yeah. So obviously I've been rewatching all her films this particular week, and I woke up very anxious and really distraught because there was this dream that I had, because there was this, it was a smaller room than I've got at the moment, and the about 90% of the room was taken up by this massive horse with a guy with a lance, I think, was sitting on the top of it and was just beckoning, like, looming over me, waiting for me to wake up, demanding that I got up, waiting for me to put a hot rod into my back. It was horrifying.
Oh my God. Yeah. I didn't realise that part of it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, this is it. But it's very, like, the themes of her films is you're watching it, and you think you're trying to make narrative sense of it, and then you realise that everything's just going to keep keeping you guessing, and that's fine. And then I kind of don't want to, it's not a spoiler, but it's always a bad thing. It's always a really
underlying
bad thing. And it's like devastating. And yeah, so there's a devastation in all of her work, and that feeling was definitely transcended into my dream, and it's in my bones. So, yeah.
So that came from, that was off the back of her, of Josephine's second film, I think it was, Thou Wast Mild and Lovely.
Yeah.
And then her debut was Butter on the Latch. And then she's got Madeline's Madeline, which is her third feature. And then something that we're really excited about is Shirley, which is her next film coming up, which I think is like her next big sort of, I think this is her moving more into the mainstream, which is exciting.
Yeah, and also to sort of hop back to that horror point, it's about Shirley Jackson, who wrote these kind of horror novels, you know. So it was interesting that she's kind of taking on much more of a direct approach, I guess, to horror in terms of, you know, her other films are sort of dabbling in this eeriness and maybe are not explicitly one or the other, but now it's kind of going to be about a horror writer. And I think, yeah, there could be really interesting things that she does with that.
I think that would be really interesting because I think Haunting of Hill House that Shirley Jackson wrote is quite a lot of it is about mental health and
oh really
it's kind of from a woman's perspective and stuff, so like I think that'll be really interesting to see how that kind of links through.
Yeah, it's got Elizabeth Moss in it as well.
Oh, perfect.
And then everyone's favorite dad, Michael Stuhlbarg.
Yeah.
I think something that I've really found when watching Madeline's Madeline is just how much my relationship, there's three central characters, so we've got Madeline, who's Helena Howard, we've got her mother, played by Miranda July, and then the head of an acting troupe, played by Molly Parker. So there's these three central characters, and you think you've got your mind made up on them, and then it all changes. It's like this, like, the film is like this living organism that's just constantly evolving and changing, which is really showing the capabilities of her as a director. She had a very vigorous rehearsal period with everybody that spanned something like 6 months, which then kind of bled into this time on set. And it just, yeah, it just has this kind of sense of it being like a living thing. And you really do find your attitudes towards everybody changing. So I interviewed Josephine recently and asked her about this. And she said that she actually went in expecting to really hate Miranda July's character. But she played her with such this sort of wide-eyed hope. Mm. And like this real desperation to bond with her daughter that you end up actually quite liking. Well, I found that I actually quite liked her.
Yeah.
No, me too.
And made me feel quite sorry for my mum.
I think that's kind of part of the sort of tragedy of the film as well, is that, you know, yeah, we're saying there's so many elements to it and so many kinds of ways that you can interpret these characters, but and it's not, you know, clear cut, and nothing in life is you know, clear cut, but it really is. Well, exactly. but no, it really does sort of inspire this sympathy for you know, both Madeline and her mum, who are just trying to, you know, see eye to eye in you know, various elements of their life, and just can't, because there's so many difficult parts of their relationship, and both of them are trying. And in some ways, Madeline can't try, you know, because of various issues. And yeah, I think Miranda July does a really excellent job of being this kind of desperate mother who is, you know, really trying to help her child.
Karina, can I ask you? You had some interesting thoughts on the character of Madeline. I was wondering if you could go into that a little bit.
Yeah, first of all, yeah, as we said, she's a fantastic presence on screen, and this really should be her breakout hit, because I think people should be lining up to get her on their films. But I thought what was interesting about her character and the themes that she was exploring. So you have mental health, which I thought was a very interesting thing, and I've never seen it captured in such a way through such a young artist. And she's obviously wanting to express herself, and it's all about that youth and trying. The way I read it is that it's a young girl, she's a teenager, trying to express herself through her art. But it's also certainly got some interesting themes on who gets to tell whose story, who gets to say, tell that person's story. And she's obviously got her own story that's going on in her head. There's a lot of internalization about whatever is going on. There's hints of her maybe having eating disorders. There's hints of her, the fact that her dad isn't around, and there's certainly a sexual element, and her dad is a black guy and her mum's a white woman, and you get little hints of that, of how she's dealing with that as a mixed race person in this world, as something that I relate to myself in some respects. But it's, again, just looking a lot of how we look at art and who gets to tell it, and the way that the teacher was essentially mining Madeline's own experiences, not necessarily understanding that it was a cry for help or that this is a young person that needs assistance mentally, but actually wanting to take those stories and essentially appropriate them for an audience. And how does that, as a society, make us feel? Do we want to see these stories that are essentially coming from a real tangled internal place for our own enjoyment?
I think it's really bold as well for a director to tackle that in a film that you could draw so many parallels to her in her real life, to Josephine Decker in her real life. And I think there's something really kind of bold and confrontational about her own practices as an artist and as a director that's kind of worth respecting in this film. And it's kind of a, I think it's fascinating the conversations that could be had around you know, respect and boundaries and artistic intention and exploitation. And this film really, really makes that conversation broad and developed, and I just think it's a really bold move from Josephine Decker as a director.
So this is the segment of the podcast where we take the bare bones of this woman's legacy and we open it up into a broader conversation about women in film. So for this episode, we wanted to discuss Josephine's body of work, which, as we've mentioned, focuses really heavily on the female experience. And we found that an opinion voiced by some is that it's quite alienating to the viewer. So it doesn't, because it's not very relatable to a large proportion of people seeing her films. And I think this opens it up into a broader conversation as to whether alienating the audience as a female filmmaker is necessarily a bad thing. I think it would be good to know a little bit about the other two films that Josephine's made. So we've got Butter on the Latch, which was her debut, as we've said, and then Thou Wast Mild and Lovely. Could you just give us like a very brief insight as to what those films are? And potentially why people might find them quite hard to relate to. It's pretty obvious upon hearing the concept in a few of them.
It makes you dream about horses.
bad dreams aside. So Butter on the Latch is just a kind of 60-minute feature. It's about two friends who go to this Balkans folk camp in the hills in California. And it's kind of, you know, arts retreat where they learn about dancing and singing and, you know, very kind of interesting folklore traditions. And essentially it becomes this, you know, a bit of a crazed downward spiral into obsession and jealousy and conflict within friendship, and takes sort of a very twisted turn towards the end. It's kind of about the breakdown of a friendship for various reasons, all within, you know, the midst of this forest location. I think Josephine Decker uses nature and that a lot in her work. Mm. And then Thou Wast Mild and Lovely again is kind of within this sort of like natural landscape. It's set on a farm. Again, a very kind of strange setup with a father and daughter who sort of seemingly just work on this farm. They've hired help for the summer, a man who is sort of keeping his own personal life a bit of a secret. And then again, it's kind of this downward spiral into a bit of a crazed nightmare, kind of, you know, for everyone involved. I think it's interesting because, you know, there's this idea that you can't relate to it or it's alienating. And I'm not necessarily sure that's really the case with her films. More so, it's just the fact that the way she presents it is quite kind of, you know, expressive in a way that maybe people aren't used to, and is a bit more free-flowing and expansive. And I think there's that kind of element to it, you know, can be hard to grasp, but within that there's, you know, the threads of kind of key stories about female identity and expression.
Definitely. Steph, what do you think?
Yeah, I think like especially them kind of being in nature, and they're very kind of like isolated places, like the folk camp, a farm, like Madeline is a lot kind of in one kind of theatre group.
It's interesting that it's a lot more interior in Madeline's Madeline, I think.
Yeah, it is interesting. But I think as well, it's that kind of, their spaces for the characters to kind of let go and like lose control a little bit. And I think maybe you don't see that from female characters as much, like maybe thinking about like, films where they're like, I can't marry this man. Like, there's none of that there. It's just like when you're like presented with this kind of, I'm out in the woods for a week, I can do what I want, essentially. Yeah. Like, you see this kind of whole other side that maybe, like, hasn't been explored as much, or definitely not in this kind of, way that Josephine Decker makes her films and expresses those kind of feelings.
Yeah. I think with Mild and Lovely in particular was very interesting in this theme of having all this landscape and all this rural, beautiful vision of the countryside in America, yet there was a real feeling of suppression, and that was tacked on to the female character, even though she should be free. She should be able to run around in the fields. She was very much having to do the chores, and she was very much under the thumb of her father, who we're not actually sure if it's her father or not. And then there's the guy that comes and helps out on the land. But there is this real machoism that is over her as a cloud. And there's these really beautiful moments where she's actually kind of freeing herself. And they're just so lovely to watch, because this is a young girl and she's just moving her body in a way that is just so, it's almost a bit exorcist-like. So I can kind of, you can kind of see her horror themes tacking in there. But there's a real freedom in her, in this, there's a juxtaposed to the freedom and the suppression, which I think comes across very interestingly in this. And then obviously sexuality is throughout all her films. And I really enjoy that space that she is able to create within her films, where it's tipping from niceties to sexualities to violence. And it's a really dark place that she manages to create in a very visual way.
What do you think it says about Josephine as a female author creating a female experience is alienating, because there are so many male authors, male directors. I'm thinking specifically of S. Craig Zahle, is that how I'm saying his surname? He made Dragged Across Concrete, Brawl on Cell Block 99. What was the other film he made? The third film? The first film? Bone Tomahawk. And he's very much, especially with Dragged Across Concrete, which has come out with Mel Gibson and Vince Vaughn in it, that he wears almost like a badge of honor the fact that he doesn't care if people get his films, he doesn't care if people like his films. It's very much the same with Nicholas Winding Refn when he made
Valhalla Rising.
any of his movies, really.
Literally any of his films. I was thinking of the film he made, is it Only God
Only
Forgives?
God Forgives. After
Drive. Drive was such a commercial hit. And then he went and made this film that really wasn't. And he was so proud of the fact that he'd made this film for himself over anybody else. And people really applaud that in male directors.
And even Josephine Decker cites, you know, Darren Aronofsky and Lars von Trier as, you know, influences in that respect. And they're definitely two other male directors that can seemingly do whatever the hell they want with their cinema. So it really is this kind of, I don't know, I guess, a real statement that as a female director, she's saying, I'm going to do exactly the same thing. And, you know, you can like it or hate it, but I'm going to express myself in the way that I want to.
I think it's nice as well that she's made this as a film that exists outside of the Hollywood system. Whether that's a conscious effort or not, it has granted her a certain amount of freedom. I'm aware of certain female directors before who have been sent to, I'm using air quotes, movie jail upon making bad films. They're kind of sent there and tend to stay there a lot longer than male directors. But I feel like existing outside of this Hollywood system, she's created a space for herself where she can do exactly the same as her male counterparts. Like, I can't think of anyone else that's done something like this. I don't know if you guys have, who are sort of...
I think this is what's so refreshing about her work. And yes, do chime in if you have got some examples for Beth. But I think it's so... This is why I'm so interested in Josephine Zecker's trajectory and how she's expanding her canon of work. Because yes, as you said, the last two films, they were 60 minutes. One was just over. That, for the average cinema, isn't something that is commercially viable. That, for the average funder, isn't something that somebody's going to give £50,000 to, or, like, at a bare minimum, that'll get you a couple of tube posters. But, you know, it hasn't stopped her creating art, and it hasn't stopped us appreciating it as things that deserve to be seen up on a big screen as well. And I'm really excited about her next film, which it seems is also going to be a feature and will hopefully play wider, because I really do believe that we're witnessing a true cinematic genius here.
Do you think she'll go on to do like a Marvel film? I'd love to see Josephine.
That would make me start watching
Black
Marvel
Widow
films,
directed by Josephine Decker.
Oh God, my nightmares on that are going to be awful.
It's an actual spider. Scarlett Johansson is an actual spider.
But you know,
at theatre camp,
she's keeping us as exhibitors on our toes. She is, as in the exhibitor landscape. So the last two films that she had, the brilliant Gemma Desai, she actually picked up those two films, screened it throughout the UK through the ICO, and that was a really interesting way to put the two films together, put them on in the cinema landscape, and make sure that a big communal audience was enjoying her films, because otherwise it saddens me to think that those films would otherwise just get lost down the back of a Netflix queue or whatever it is that you watch your movies on, where things are a little bit, air quotes, random and weird.
Not like in Mubi, where they're dedicating an entire to her season, which you can now watch on Mubi.
I'll send Mubi my invoice for that one.
Thank you, Mubi.
I guess for other female filmmakers that are in a similar vein, I guess maybe like Lynn Ramsey before she went into like doing We Need to Talk About Kevin and stuff like that. Or maybe
but even that, honest, even
because
that,
it's like films where you're like, I remember when I watched Morven Callor in the cinema, and like there were some people that came out and they were like, what? Like, why did she like go off on holiday with her boyfriend's money or whatever? And it's films where you can't like maybe explain the character's motives right away, or you're a bit like confused by it, and you have to like do the work to.
Well, I will
come
say,
at it from something different.
You're absolutely right. I will say, with Josephine Decker's work, I've seen all her films multiple times now, and they develop a different character every time I watch it, and that's between myself and my own understanding of characters. And you know, last time I saw them, though, I was a bit younger, and I've developed in certain aspects of my character that is able to help me recognise certain bits and appreciate certain elements of those characters and the themes that she's looking at. But I would 100% say that you need to stick with her work, and you need to see it on multiple times, because it is, it's like you don't look at the Mona Lisa and go, right, I'm not going to see that again.
I get it. I've seen the sunflowers.
Don't need to see Van Gogh again. You know, it's art, and it needs to be revisited because your relationships will change with it. And I think that's what makes her work so special.
Mm. And on that note, we'll conclude our first ever episode of Who Is She? A Bechdel Test First podcast. We'd like to say a special thank you to Mubi UK and Ireland, and to Josephine Decker for being so generous with her time and just so great. Isn't she great?
So great.
For our next episode, we will be delving into the career of comedy extraordinaire turned working class hero, Regina Hall, who I just love. We'll be launching this episode in a few weeks. Keep an eye on our social media for updates. You can follow us at Bechdel Test First for updates on that, plus all of our upcoming events. Girls, any housekeeping? Where can we find you? Where can we follow you individually?
Well, I am at Karina Karina, double R, one N.
Get it right.
The love of God, get it right.
Or, of course, you can follow us all at Bechdel Deathfest.
This is our horror. Our horror strand of our program.
I didn't tell you guys, but we're doing an offshoot. Get ready. You can follow us at Bechdel Test Fest on Instagram and Twitter. That's Bechdel Test Fest.
Steph Watts, where can we find you?
You can find me at _StephWatts on Twitter.
If you also get a chance, I implore you to check out the custom postcards that Steph designed for us. We'll have a picture of those up under the link for the podcast, I guess. But they really are wonderful. We actually gave Josephine a few of them and she loved them. So we got a very pure photo of her holding them as well, putting like the goofiest, loveliest face ever, which we'll also post. And then Caitlin, where can we find you?
Yes, so I'm on Twitter at CSA Quinlan, which is Quinlan, if you are desperate to know. And yeah, if you go on the Bechdel Test Fest website, you can sign up to our newsletter as well, which is kind of weekly roundup of events that we recommend and news articles and things that you should be engaging with, or we think you should be engaging with, as well as information on our events and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Caitlin lovingly curates that for us every week, so be sure to check that out. And then I'm Beth Webb. You can find me on Beth K Webb on Twitter. All right, thank you so much for listening, guys, and we can't wait to come back at you in a few weeks' time with our Regina Hall special. Thank you very much, girls, and ta-ra.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye.
Who Is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast is a Bechdel Test Fest production. It was written and hosted by Beth Webb and produced by Stephanie Watts, with additional support from Karina Antrobus and Caitlin Quinlan. Our music was written and produced by Zoe Mead. Check out her band Wildest on all major streaming platforms. Madeline's Madeline clips were courtesy of MUBI.
Thank you for listening to Who Is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast. If you liked what you heard, please be sure to subscribe and let us know what you think as well. We're really keen to hear your comments and your feedback. And if you have any future suggestions for women that we can profile, we would love to hear from you.